Hello and welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast. Today I'm speaking with John Lockwood about combination products and the unique advantages they offer by combining different elements to deliver improved therapeutic outcomes. These products typically require approval from the FDA due to their complex nature and the need to ensure safety and efficacy. John is Senior Director, Head of Medical Devices, IVDs for PharmaLex, where he leverages more than 28 years of industry experience across quality, regulatory, and operations. John, welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast.
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for the introduction. I'm delighted to join you today.
Great. So while no doubt listeners will have a pretty good idea of what a combination product is, it would be great if you could start with a really clear definition for our audience.
Sure. It's really what the name suggests. It's a combination of two or more regulated components from a medical perspective, such as the combination of a drug and device or a drug and biologic as a single entity. It also can apply to the combination of two or more separate products packaged together, such as a first aid kit. But to be fair, most people think about it when they hear the term. It's usually a drug device or biologic device combo. For instance, some common examples include drug delivery systems, such as prefilled syringes, devices coated with drugs or biologics, drug biologic combinations, such as an antibody drug conjugate, and then the pre-mentioned co-packaged drug device components, such as the first aid kit. The critical element for determining how a combination product will be regulated is based on the primary mode of action, or PMOA.
Thank you, John. I guess that really leads to my next question, which is, how is the PMOA determined, perhaps starting from the point of view of jurisdiction?
Sure. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act defines PMOA as the single mode of action of a combination product that provides the most important therapeutic action of the combination product. So if the primary mode of action is attributed to the actions of the drug, then the center with primary jurisdiction over the product review and approval will be the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, or CDER. If the product's PMOA is associated with the biologic, then CBER would have primary jurisdiction. And then in cases where the PMOA is driven by the actions of the device component, the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, or CDRH, would have primary jurisdiction. In some cases, the most important therapeutic action can't be determined since each constituent part is playing a role. In this case, the agency will assign the jurisdiction of the combination product based on two criteria. One, which center regulates other combination products that have similar questions about safety and effectiveness. And then secondarily, which center has the most expertise related to the most critical safety and effectiveness questions surrounding the use of the product. Regardless of which center is assigned with primary jurisdiction, the review team will likely include the non-primary center for consultation during the product review cycle.
So I'm thinking, is one more complex than the other? For example, is it more complex to have a combination product where the drug is the primary mode of action as opposed to the device being the primary mode of action?
Elizabeth, that's a great question. Based on my experience, I would generally say yes. New drugs or chemical entities obviously have a very extended development and approval cycle, often requiring multiple clinical trials, which can drive the time to market to greater than 10 years. Whereas the typical development time for a device may be more like 3 years or less. For generic drugs, the timeline to market would be considerably less than a new drug, since the sponsor does not need to repeat the animal or clinical studies that would be required of a brand name medicine to demonstrate safety and effectiveness. Developing a direct delivery device for a generic drug would not require the sponsor to reprove that the drug is safe and effective, provided that the route of administration and the dosage strength are not changing. Developing a delivery device for a new chemical entity would require the sponsor to demonstrate that the administration route was safe and effective. The device components would typically be treated as part of a container closure system description, handled accordingly in the NDA or BLA.
Thank you for clarifying that, John. Can we briefly discuss what the Office of Combination Products is responsible for at the FDA?
Yes, Elizabeth. Well, mostly the office is there to make jurisdictional decisions. As a sponsor, you may make a formal request through the Request for Designation process, or RFD, or you can gather informal, non-binding feedback using the pre-request for designation submission process. Both processes provide feedback regarding the agency's thoughts on whether the product is considered a drug, a device, a biologic, or a combination product, and which center might be assigned primary jurisdiction. It's the Office of Combination Products, or OCP, that performs the designation review. OCP is also responsible for developing FDA guidance for industry on combination products. And under the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, also known as PDUFA, ensuring review times are met within governmental requirements as part of the overall product approval.
So their role is more one of oversight, is that correct?
That's right. They don't carry out the actual product reviews. They don't carry out the actual product approval reviews. So if your product is a drug device combination product where the drug is the primary mode of action, then CDER would do the review and OCP would consult with CDRH with regards to the device components, making sure that the device components of the submission were adequate. OCP is responsible for making sure that the reviews happen according to the mandated review timelines that are reported to Congress.
I guess that makes sense. Thank you for clarifying. Let's talk a bit about the different types of combination products.
Sure, Elizabeth. In many cases, we're really talking about some kind of delivery system, whether that's a prefilled syringe, an auto-injector, an inhaler, or so on. There are also products such as drug-eluting stents, monoclonal antibodies combined with therapeutic drugs, as well as co-packaged products such as first aid kits, which contain bandages and gauze, which are devices and drugs, which, you know, an antibiotic ointment or pain relievers.
So how do companies actually go about getting their product designation with these different product types?
Well, as I mentioned previously, sponsors may request from FDA a formal assignment through a process called a request for designation. But within the last couple of years, FDA has been pushing companies to utilize a less restrictive and informal process called a pre-RFD. The biggest difference between the RFD and the pre-RFD process include the length of the submission and the depth of the regulatory analysis that the sponsor must provide. For example, RFDs per guidance are not to exceed 15 pages, but there's no such length requirement that exists for the pre-RFD submission.
Thank you for that, John. Another issue that would be good for our audience is perhaps to address how good manufacturing practice and how it applies to combination products. Perhaps you can elaborate on that for us, please.
Yeah, absolutely. There's specific FDA guidance with regards to handling GMP for combination products. But at the end of the day, the expectation that FDA would have is that if you are manufacturing combination product, you'll follow the GMP expectations for both drugs and devices. In a lot of cases, these are drug delivery systems, so the company's quality system needs to be based on the drug GMPs, but would also have a device GMP aspect to their quality system as well. This includes adequate vendor qualification and purchasing controls for activities that may be outsourced, such as device development.
Can you share with our listeners how adverse events are actually handled for combination products?
Absolutely. It depends on the type of combination product that we're talking about. If it's a combination product that is marketed as a single entity, for example, a drug-eluting stent, then the applicant of the combination product would be responsible for reporting to the center affected by the reportable event. If the combination product is made up of two or more separate products packaged together, for example, a first aid kit or a drug and syringe, then the applicant would report separately to each constituent part in accordance to the requirements and processes associated with the application type for that constituent part. For example, consider a reportable event for drug device combination product, where the event is related to the device components of the product. The applicant would need to comply with the medical device reporting regulations in 21 CFR 803, even if the primary mode of action for the product is driven by the drug.
Thank you for joining me today, John, and for joining Pharmalex Talks podcast and for giving our audience deeper insight into combination products and the regulatory process involved. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.